This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The Patriot Act lives. After weeks of political brinksmanship between the White House and a stubborn coalition of Democratic and Republican senators, the two sides finally reached agreement a few days ago. The new version of the anti-terrorism bill heads now to Congress for a vote. At the heart of the debate was a trade-off between civil liberties and security. Are the intrusions allowed under the Patriot Act appropriate and necessary in the age of terrorism? The White House and Republican leaders in the House argue that law enforcement needs wider powers to investigate potential terrorists. At the end of last year, as the most controversial parts of the law were set to expire, a bipartisan group of senators challenged the scope of police powers. Senator John Sununu, who led that group, joins us later to talk about the compromise he's now reached with the White House. Today, we'll look at the new version of the Patriot Act, and we'll put the civil liberties debate into historical perspective. Of course, we'd like to hear from you. How do you feel about your civil liberties in the post 9/11 world? Do you feel you have fewer liberties, or is the Patriot Act necessary? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is talk@npr.org. Later in the program, we'll be joined by NPR's political junkie Ken Rudin about the give us the latest on the Senate race in Ohio. But first, the new Patriot Act, and we turn now to someone who's followed this legislation closely. Charles Babington is congressional reporter for The Washington Post, and he joins us from Capitol Hill. Nice to have you back on the program.
Thanks for having me, Neil.
What's the difference between this new version of the Patriot Act and the old one?
Well, if you look at the question exactly as you posed it, there are a number of differences because you have to remember that, the main components of it were scheduled to expire, and what we've had is temporary extensions of the old law while they worked out the details of the new law. This latest final compromise that you'll talk later with Senator Sununu about dealt with only a relative handful of finally outstanding issues. But the biggest issues, biggest changes, I guess you'd say, is that there are now some limits on, pretty tight limits on being able to get records from libraries, for example. There's also a chance now to, if you get one of these so-called Section 15 subpoenas that orders you to turn over various kinds of documents or records, that notice will also tell you, and you can't tell anybody about this. Now you have a chance to challenge that gag order. Now you have to wait a year, and that may seem a long time to a lot of people, but at least you have a chance to do that.
Now, wait a minute. Wasn't there a shorter waiting period before you could challenge under the old law?
Well, under the old law, as I understand it, and you might want to double-check this because it's been somewhat confusing, the interpretation of it was you couldn't challenge it at all. Under one of the interim proposals was a 90-day.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, that was the agreement of the legislation, but that never got passed. So really what they were debating most recently, should it be 90 days? Or should it be a year? And the one-year waiting period is what ultimately won out.
Mm-hmm. And in general, is the Patriot Act going to be stronger or weaker than it was before?
Well, I guess you could say, if you want to look at it that way, it's somewhat weaker than it was originally because there are these new guidelines or provisions that are written into it. But from the civil liberty standpoints of ACLU and many others, mm-hmm. including quite a number of members of Congress, there's not enough, that these safeguards don't go far enough. So really, as you said at the beginning of the show here, it's obviously a balancing act between security and civil liberties, and it's really where along that continuum, the marker is going to be.
And in other words, you can't argue that the Patriot Act does not erode civil liberties. The question whether it does so appropriately and necessarily.
Precisely, and one man's appropriate is another man's inappropriate, perhaps, and that's what the whole debate has been about. And it got down to a really handful of members, especially in the Senate, where, as you know, 40. Or 41 members can, through a filibuster, keep the whole body from passing something, and that's what you had was holding it up in the Senate until this relative handful of Republican members led by John Sununu finally agreed to these terms that we've been talking about.
And, of course, that little group of Republicans that give the Democrats enough to hold up a filibuster, they have a lot of weight there because they're the swing votes.
Exactly.
At the same time, we have to point out that this was not just this group of Republican and Democratic senators talking to the White House. There's another group involved here, the House of Representatives.
Exactly. The House approved a bill that did not have some of these safeguards that we've talked about or had them in a weaker form. And they feel, at least the leadership, those who supported this bill, were somewhat unhappy in December when they thought that the Senate should have agreed to this, and they were unhappy when the Senate did not and insisted on these further farther-reaching safeguards. And at that point, they said, "Well, we're going to agree to only a very short-term extension," and tried to put more heat on the Senate to come closer to the House version. And probably in the end, that succeeded. I think they were able to extract some more concessions from the holdout senators than they originally might. It might have looked like they were going to get.
Well, we'll ask Senator Sununu about that later when he joins us. If you'd like to join us, our number is 800-989-8255. Our email is talk@npr.org. And let's take a question from Tiffany. Tiffany's calling us from Roanoke in Virginia.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. I really just have a question about the relevance of the Patriot Act at all. It seems as though recently we've seen a lot of executive indiscretion used when it comes to the type of information that is acquired about U.S. citizens, etc. And my question, I guess, really is, it seems as though many of the provisions in the Patriot Act, which was just renewed not long ago, have been broken by the administration. I just really like to get some thoughts on whether or not...
What do you mean broken by the administration?
It just seems to me as though a lot of the laws that the legislature has been passing recently, when it grants access to the administration and the government in general to access information about Americans, well, those laws seem to be bypassed, and we're currently dealing with hearings on that.
About the FISA court and the warrantless wiretapping by the National Security Agency.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And I just wonder if this Patriot Act revision would in any way affect that, or would even be relevant given that circumstance.
Charles Babington, does that come up at all?
They are two different issues, Neil. Although, just as Tiffany suggested, it's really hard to see them as entirely separate, because in so many ways they do seem to overlap in both cases. Obviously, we're talking about trying to intercept communications involving terrorist suspects. That said, this newer issue of the recently revealed NSA surveillance program, which is already the subject of some hearings and it's stirred up a lot of debate here, is sort of overshadowing almost, if you will, the Patriot Act extension. But they are two separate laws. The Patriot Act does not involve the FISA court. I guess what they maybe have in common is one difficulty that not only the average citizen has, but also a member of Congress has, is that it's hard to know exactly what is going on, and that they, even members of Congress, have a lot of questions because so much of this is secret.
Mm-hmm.
and is not going to be talked about in an open meeting, even with or even a closed meeting with a large number of members of Congress.
Charles, Tiffany, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Let me ask you, when this New York Times report disclosing the NSA warrantless wiretapping came out, that was in the middle of the debate over the extension of the Patriot Act. There were even some who suggested that the Times may have been trying to affect that debate in the timing of the story. After all, they had been sitting on it for a while. In the end, did this NSA story play a role in the debate over the Patriot Act?
I think it did, Neil. That story broke really on the morning of the day that the Patriot Act renewal was scheduled for a vote in the Senate. I think it did play a role, and I think it did make some lawmakers more concerned, more cautious, looking at this in the larger issue, picture, just as Tiffany suggested. It's hard to say exactly how it played out, but it was a very interesting timing, and I think it did have some impact.
Charles Babington, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Charles Babington, a correspondent for The Washington Post, is speaking with us from Capitol Hill. Well, debate over civil liberties is nothing new for Americans. During the Cold War, there was Joseph McCarthy and the threat of communism. There was, of course, civil liberties infractions during the Second World War, the internment of Japanese Americans, most prominent among them. And of course, during Vietnam, there was opposition to the draft. To place the Patriot Act debate in some historical perspective, we turn now to Peter Swire, a law professor at The Ohio State University and a fellow at the Center for American Progress. He's with us here in Studio 3A. Good to talk to you, Peter.
Hello, Neil.
I wonder, if you look at the way our civil liberties have changed in the four and a half, almost 5 years coming on now since 9/11, is there a comparable period in American history that we can now look back to and say, this is how we react in times of crisis?
Well, we have had earlier crises. After World War II, when China turned communist, that led to the McCarthy era. That was the 1950s. And during that period, J. Edgar Hoover announced that the FBI had a policy of prevention. We're going to prevent the attack instead of doing it first. And so in a lot of ways, what we're hearing today is prevention again. It's the same idea, the same paradigm we've seen before.
In those days, he had no 9/11 to point to. There had not been an attack.
No, there had been something bigger. The most populous country in the world, China, had gone from being a major American ally to being a communist foe of the United States. And at the same time, the Soviet Union had developed first the A-bomb and then the hydrogen bomb. So we had nuclear weapons and we had the most populous nation of the earth turned against us.
And civil liberties that were eroded during the McCarthy era involved, loyalty pledges, blacklists of people who wouldn't be allowed to work in various industries, that sort of thing. That was pretty bad.
And an idea that the threat was here at home. You know, the cliche was there's a communist under every bed, or at least you have to look for one. And so the idea of that domestic threat and that combined with the sort of imminent nuclear threat facing us internationally, I think had a sense of crisis that I think by almost any measure had to be much bigger than any crisis we faced in the last few years.
And I guess the analogy to sleeper cells is not entirely entirely inappropriate.
They were called front organizations, I think, in those days.
Peter Swire, stay with us. If you'd like to join our conversation, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. Later in the program, we'll be joined by Senator John Sununu, Republican from New Hampshire, who helped negotiate the compromise on the Patriot Act with the White House, so stay tuned with that. I'm Neil Conan. We'll be back after the break. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. After weeks of delay, both sides in a dispute over the USA Patriot Act reached an agreement last week. The sticking points were how to best protect national security without treading too much on civil liberties. What can we learn from history about the balance between civil liberties and security? If you have questions, join the conversation. Our number is 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And with us is Peter Swire, who was now a law professor at The Ohio State University Law School, but was chief counselor for privacy back in the Clinton administration. Let's get another caller on the line. This is Mike. Mike calling us from Notre Dame, Indiana.
Yes, Neil. Thank you. Just wanted to comment on the fact that all of the intelligence of 9/11 was in existence without the Patriot Act pre-9/11, and that any need for more intelligence, I think, was more of a need for competence than intelligence.
Peter Swire, let me ask you about that. Yes, they did have a fair amount of intelligence. One of the things the Patriot Act does, though, is, sort of, as they say, break down those barriers. So police information, FBI information, can be shared with intelligence agencies and vice versa.
Yeah, I think there did need to be some updating of the law. When I was in the White House, I chaired a multi-agency working group on how to update the wiretap laws for the Internet age. That was 2000, the year before the attacks. And there were technical things that had to be changed, and we proposed legislation that year that the Congress didn't move on. So some things, including some changes to FISA, clearly were needed.
The Foreign Intelligence Surveillance
Act.
I'm
sorry, I think it's a word.
Shorthand.
Right.
We all know that by
right.
now. When you talked about updating information on wiretaps, was the proposal close to the roving wiretaps that were, in fact, installed by the Patriot Act?
Well, roughly speaking, we had a certain set of proposals to increase surveillance, and the Patriot Act doubled or tripled those. We also had provisions to update privacy protections to give email the same protections you get for phone calls, but those got left out in the process in 2001.
Mike?
That was it, Neil. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it. Let's turn now to Sean. Sean calling us from Las Vegas.
Hi. What's frustrating about this whole debate and all these powers that Congress are giving to the president is none of them seem to be talking about what happens one if an American citizen is brought up on terrorism charges and those charges are dismissed because of the method of intelligence gathering, are these American citizens going to be taken into custody indefinitely as American enemy combatants? And also, what happens if they find out during their intelligence gathering through all these different powers that somebody's about to, say, rob a bank, steal a car, transport drugs into the United States? You know, nobody's talking about these basic civil liberties that we all have that don't relate to terrorism. And I'll take any comments off the air.
Okay, Sean. Thanks very much.
There were proposals that Democrats made, which is that the Patriot Act should, this was back in 2001, should apply to terrorist crimes.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, the Justice Department insisted they apply to all crimes, so they can be used for child support payments or whatever it is. And so it's really a change in the overall legal system and not just in the anti-terrorism system.
Thereby answering some of his points. But the other aspect of this is, I think a lot of people are confusing, and we tried to clear it up with Charles Babington earlier, but this NSA warrantless wiretapping, again, a separate program from the Patriot Act.
Well, yes, but I think they're more linked than separate, right? So the Patriot Act, as it's being reauthorized right now, makes permanent some of the changes to the foreign intelligence law from 2001.
Mm-hmm.
Other changes have been proposed, for instance, by Senator DeWine of Ohio, and the administration a couple of years ago opposed those and said they had all the powers they needed under FISA.
Mm-hmm.
So as we were trying to update the laws in this area, the administration said 2 years ago in Congress in sworn testimony they have all the powers they need. We now know that they were going ahead and doing things outside of FISA nonetheless. So I think it's linked. I think the key thing...
For which they also say they have constitutional and specific legislative authority. You can debate the point,
right,
but that's what they say.
Well, and so this gets to the central thing right now, which is how much executive power. When are we going to have courts? When are we going to have Congress involved? I think we all want to have effective tools against terrorists. And the people... my own legal training says that you don't want to have unchecked power, that you want to have, for instance, in these Section 215 orders in the Patriot Act, you want to have judges with some say in how that works. A lot of the most troubling parts of the Patriot Act are where there's no judge involved and the executive gets to do it all by itself.
And that seemed to be a point that many senators brought up at the hearings on the NSA wiretapping last week. But what about the other point in the call? What happens if an American is brought up on terrorism charges and then questions are raised about the legality of the method by which the information on which the indictment was based?
Right.
What happens then?
Well, so there was a report in the press last week in the Washington Post that said the FISA court is going to refuse to issue any FISA warrants. They're going to refuse to have these ongoing surveillances
mm-hmm.
based on anything from the NSA program. And apparently the head of the FISA court said that a couple of years ago to the Justice Department. So that means if the Justice Department goes down this road of acting outside of the statutory framework, they can't use that in subsequent criminal and foreign intelligence investigations. That's one of many reasons to think we're going to have more effective tools if we write statutes that tell us what the rules are going to be here.
Let's get another caller in. Carol. Carol calling us from West Paris in Maine.
Hello. Yes, I just wanted to make a couple of comments. I'm an American Airlines flight attendant on my way to work in London. And the Patriot Act, as it currently stands and as it's being debated, does not make me feel any safer, neither at work nor as an American citizen. I do not like being listened into when I make calls to my relatives overseas. My spouse is foreign-born and a foreign citizen. And my concern is very much over civil liberties, and especially being in a profession where we were very much affected by 9/11. I mean, certainly more affected than many other jobs in this country. And I just wonder what is being done to protect our civil liberties.
Peter Swire?
I'm not the sole defender of civil liberties. I hope we have effective tools for security, and we also have civil liberties. My theme here, I think, is that we should figure out what the laws are that we need, and then have those laws be ones where the courts and where the Congress are involved. We went down the road in the 1960s and into the 70s where we had the imperial presidency, where there were hearings that turned out the executive was breaking the law a lot in the name of prevention. And I think people who see history say that human nature hasn't changed very much in 50 years. And so if you have unchecked power, you have this long-term problem. And so going forward on the Patriot Act and on the NSA wiretaps, I think the theme is let's have the sensible checks and balances we've always thought we should have when it comes to these executive powers.
Mm-hmm. Carol, good luck. That's a long commute to London.
Yes, but Maine's a beautiful place to live, so I want to keep it that way. I'm very proud to live here, and I hope that as U.S. citizens we can keep our civil liberties in check while also, you know, balancing what we need to do for safety and security.
Okay, Carol, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Have a good flight.
Thank you.
Peter Swire, are there, what examples do we know of, and again, a lot of this is shrouded in secrecy, some of those, you know, national security letters, for example, you wouldn't know about those because they're gag orders attached to them. But so far as we know, what, under the Patriot Act, what encroachments of civil liberties, you know, who's been affected? What bad has happened?
Well, I think one thing is the NSA wiretap program, that the little bit we know about it shows is that
started before the Patriot
which
Act.
It was after the attacks, and the Patriot Act was introduced
October.
Into Congress 8 days after the attacks.
It was passed in October.
So, what we know now is that we've had statements by the administration that court orders are still in place and all this, but that wiretaps were going on at least thousands of Americans and possibly quite a lot more.
Are these NSA wiretaps?
These were the NSA wiretaps.
Okay, under the Patriot Act.
But the Patriot Act changed FISA. Patriot Act said we're going to take the wall down between law enforcement and foreign intelligence. It said we're going to have longer time for emergency orders.
And it lowered the standard of evidence that you would need to get a warrant from the FISA court.
Including for roving wiretaps and for trap and trace for the phone.
But so that's different from this NSA program.
Well, but I think the question, I don't quite see the difference, because to me it's how do you use your statutory authorities under FISA, and then what do you do outside of those authorities? And we changed the law the way the administration asked on FISA, but then they went and did things beyond that, and I think that's a big concern.
Peter Swire, stay with us. Joining us now is the senator who brokered the deal with the White House, Senator John Sununu, Republican from New Hampshire. He's in his office on Capitol Hill. Nice to talk to you again, Senator.
Good afternoon.
So what happened here? What was the compromise deal?
Well, the arrangement or the agreement that we worked out dealt in three areas, gave us additional improvement in each of those three areas. I say in addition because we were able to get the sunsets moved from 7 years to 4 years. Previously, they dropped a criminal penalty or a criminal misdemeanor for inadvertent disclosure of NSLs and made some other changes.
NSL, those national security letters. Go ahead.
Yeah. Pardon me?
NSLs are national security letters.
That's correct. I apologize for the jargon.
We've been decrypting acronyms all day here, Senator.
But we made additional progress in three areas. One, we created an explicit judicial review for the gag order that comes along with a 215 subpoena.
Mm-hmm.
We added language that clarifies that libraries operating in their traditional roles are not subject to national security letters. And we got them to drop a provision that would have required the recipient of an NSL to disclose the name of their lawyer to the FBI. And, you know, just on principle, I think that's something that could easily discourage people from seeking legal advice.
So, and I know you've also said this is not everything you wanted, but it's as good as you could get now.
It's not. Look, if you're sitting down to try to work out differences, inevitably you're going to make gains, and you're going to have to make some compromises. It's totally unrealistic to think you can sit down at a table, insist on a list of improvements, and get everything you want. But we made real progress in these three areas. We've made a lot of progress since the initial bill that was passed in the wake of the attacks on September 11th. And let's face it, the administration's original position when we began this process a year ago was make all the provisions permanent and don't change anything. And I think we've markedly improved from that original line.
One other factor in this was, of course, the House of Representatives, who were very supportive of the White House position here.
Well, that's not entirely true. you've got to be careful when you attempt to speak for the entire House of Representatives.
Okay.
In conference, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee on the House, Jim Sensenbrenner, certainly aligned himself with the Justice Department. But remember, the House voted on a number of these provisions, sneak and peek search warrants, sunsets, and on these and other issues, they supported the Senate's position. So on a straight up or down vote on many of these provisions, the House has supported the Senate. But when they got into conference, it was a different story, and the negotiations were a little bit more difficult.
And have you been assured that the agreement you reached at the White House last week, that's the version that's now going to go to the conference?
That's certainly my understanding, and that's part of the agreement, the announcement of support made by the White House. The Speaker of the House has indicated his support for these three additional changes, the leadership in the Senate, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, and at a certain point, you'll have to take those commitments at their word, move forward with the bill that we've already introduced to make the changes and get it done.
We're talking with Senator John Sununu, Republican of New Hampshire. Also with us, Peter Swire, who was a chief counselor for privacy back in the Clinton administration. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get some more listeners on the line. This is Stacy. Stacy calling from San Francisco.
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah.
I have two questions. How long is this going to be in effect? And are we just living in a permanent state of terrorism so that the government will just state that we can't eradicate terrorism, so we're just going to continue this Patriotic Act? And it's relating to the points that have been made previously with internment, Japanese camps, McCarthy era. You know, how did we get those to stop, and how can we get this to stop? When is the end of this?
Mm-hmm. Senator Sununu.
Well, that's the importance of the sunset requirements, the requirements that the authorization only lasts for a predetermined amount of time.
What is that time?
Well, originally it was 5 years or 4 years. That's why we're here today.
Because they were set to expire January 1st.
Exactly. And the most controversial provisions in the law, the 215 subpoenas, the roving wiretaps, and what are called the lone wolf provisions now have another four-year sunset. So they will have to be revisited within 4 years, either reauthorized or set aside. And that's the kind of check that you're talking about. I mean, that's the one way that we can ensure that this has to be revisited and that we have to ask the hard questions you point out.
And Peter Swire, let me ask you the other half of Stacy's question. The Cold War sure went on for a long time, too. At what point how was this debate? Was there an end to these abuses back in the Cold War, is I guess the question.
Well, first, I agree with the senator on the key role of sunsets. That's how we get to look at it. That's why we got to have the improvements this year that the senator helped lead. In terms of the history, I think the big thing that happened was Watergate. Because after that came 1978, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, came a lot of changes to the laws in this area. It was basically when there was a thorough investigation that we cleaned up the act, and that investigation is really, I think, key to the NSA wiretap story this year.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I think we're getting into dangers of the fact, if you would allow me to expand. When did the Japanese know that they were going to be free? I mean, when did the people that were in the Inquisition of the American Civil Liberties during McCarthy, when did they know that that inquisition was going to be ended? And so how can we as American citizens, I'm a realtor, and I have to have my clients sign documents regarding to the Patriotic Act. They're appalled if they want to buy a house. This extends more to the library's issues. It extends to most a lot of issues that we as American citizens are having to face.
Stacy, thanks very much for the call.
All right.
And Senator Sununu, the library issue that Stacy referred to, that has now been substantially changed.
Well, it has been to a certain extent. Look, libraries can always be subject to the 215 subpoena, which is used far less frequently than national security letters, which requires a statement of facts and some other material presentations and the approval of a judge. There are specific protections, however, for libraries that are served with the 215. What we did is for the national security letters, which are far more numerous, on the order of thousands of national security letters issued each year, is we made a good faith effort, I think, to clarify the language and to say that libraries, in their traditional role of lending books, making digital books available, providing access to the Internet, are not subject to national security letters, which are intended to be used for other purposes.
Senator Sununu, stay with us, if you will. We're going to take a short break. Peter Swire wanted to thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you as well.
Peter Swire, a law professor at the Ohio State University Law School and formerly chief counselor for privacy in the Clinton administration. He was with us here in Studio 3A. After the break, we'll also be joined by NPR's political junkie Ken Rudin with news of politics. I think we're going to be looking at Ohio, where there has been some news. I'm Neil Conan. Stay with us. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today we're talking about a deal to extend the USA Patriot Act, a deal that was in part brokered by Republican Senator John Sununu of New Hampshire. He's with us on the line. And Senator Sununu, let me ask you, what part in the end do you think the revelations about the NSA wiretapping played in this discussion?
None. The timing, obviously, was significant or coincidental.
Mm-hmm.
But we had the votes to defeat cloture prior to the revelations and would have been able to delay the implementation of the bill at the end of the year. And having delayed it, I think we were stood in good stead to force some discussion and negotiation of changes in order to move forward and complete work on the bill. So I don't think it really had an impact on getting the work done or getting the votes necessary to delay the bill. It certainly might have highlighted and reinforced concerns in some people's minds or just raised these general issues to a higher level, that we give law enforcement tools that we believe are important and necessary to fight terrorism, but at the same time, we need to make sure there are appropriate checks and balances, or protections for civil liberties, oversight on the part of Congress, and reporting to the American people. And that's how we can sort of rest assured that we're striking the right balance.
Do you find that members of the Senate are in general more nervous about these issues after reading the White House's interpretation of the FISA Act and its justification for the warrantless wiretaps?
I don't know. I couldn't generalize. You saw the hearings in the mm-hmm. Judiciary Committee. There are clearly Democrats and Republicans that have very substantial questions about the administration's legal rationalization, their description of how the work at the NSA fits into FISA, the discussion and debate about what the president's constitutional powers are in a time of war, or for that matter, in a time of peace.
Mm-hmm.
Those are questions that the Judiciary Committee and the Intelligence Committees are going to have to wrestle with as they do their hearings and their oversight work. It's very important, however, that these committees of jurisdiction know and understand what was done and take a hard look at whether FISA works effectively or whether it needs to be amended.
Now, let's get another caller in on the line. This is Jan. Jan calling us from Parkville in Missouri.
Hi there.
Hi.
Good afternoon, Senator.
Good afternoon.
I have a comment and a question, and they dovetail. My comment was, I hear about this investigation of the supposed leak about the wiretapping, and our illustrious senator from Kit Bond from Missouri is saying that, that's whoever did the leak is not a patriot, should be imprisoned. And I think, well, he's not the one, or she is not the one who made the leak. It was the president that started the whole thing. Why should... If the president didn't do these unwarranted wiretaps, there never would have been a leak. That's my comment, and it dovetails into my question, which is American democracy is different than other democracy in the world because we have a Bill of Rights. Other countries don't have a Bill of Rights. And I'm not that I am, lecturing to anybody, but it's just I'm concerned about my Fourth Amendment rights under the Patriot Act. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like my Fourth Amendment rights are preserved with the Patriot Act. I guess it's that 215 that you were talking about.
Yeah, and Fourth Amendment, for those who haven't read their Constitution lately, searches and seizures. But go ahead, Senator Sununu.
Well, the point you make is a very important one. First, about the leaks, this question of the role and responsibility of the press, the role and responsibility of whistleblowers is one that's been discussed for decades, and it will be discussed long after this particular event as well. We expect a vibrant, free press, a press that's both behaves responsibly when there's a belief that national security is placed at risk by reporting something, but also behaves aggressively in disclosing issues that they think the public ought to know about. So that's the role of the press. Those are the issues at stake here. I think if someone, you know, leaked this maliciously to undermine our national security, that ought to be dealt with. But I certainly don't think that there was anything malicious in the New York Times and their objectives or goals in publishing the story. The Fourth Amendment is just as you describe it. It is intended to protect our individual rights, in this case, regarding searches and seizures. The Bill of Rights themselves are the best embodiment of protection of civil liberties and balances that were put in place because the framers understood we were giving the government a lot of power. We were giving the government certain police powers to conduct investigations, to subpoena people, to bring them, to charge them with crimes, you know, to collect evidence. We're giving the government a host of powers to do these things, and they recognized we had to put in place amendments enshrining these rights so that people knew they would have access to attorneys and due process, protection from, you know, cruel and unusual punishment, and protection of private property. And those are what the Fourth Amendment and others are all about. And that's where you have to draw your inspiration, I think, if you're going to try to tackle these issues and do what we did on the Patriot Act or ask questions about the NSA or any other law enforcement activity of the federal government. You have to draw some inspiration between both the letter and the spirit of those original 10 amendments.
Jan, thanks very much for the call.
I'm just grateful that the debate is even coming up in the Congress.
I appreciate that, and I certainly agree with you that it's just nice to be debating these issues, and there are going to be people who disagree with me and people who agree with me, but this is the kind of thing we should be spending our time discussing and debating in Congress.
Thank you.
Thanks again, Jan. Senator Sununu, thank you for your time.
It's been a pleasure, Neil. Thank you very much.
John Sununu, Republican senator from New Hampshire, joined us on the phone from his office on Capitol Hill.